Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, and welcome to A Fine Time for Healing, a sanctuary for your emotional well-being. Your host is Randy Fine, author of the memoir Finally, and the inspirational self-help book Awaken from Life. Here's Randy.
Good morning. Thank you for tuning in, to listen to A Fine Time for Healing. I am your talk radio show host, Randy Fine. How much do we love our animals? Don't we love them so much? A close bond with our animals brings us joy and actually improves our health. And today's guest, Lessa Alexander, comes from a line of healers, diviners, artists, and earth guardians. Prophetic dreams, creating art, singing to trees, animals, and the land were ways that Lessa naturally moved through her childhood. I'm having trouble with this show. Let me see what's going on here. I want to give you a good introduction, and I can't seem to get my computer. There we go. Okay. Sorry about that. In Lessa's 30s and 40s, she spent 14 years with indigenous teachers, formally studying each guardianship, earth medicine, animal knowledge, Christology, oracle, and other forms of working with nature, the earth, and animals. Lessa has been practicing earth medicine most of her life and has been teaching since 1989. She is an animal communicator and healing touch for animals. Practitioner, also a gemstone energy medicine practitioner. In honoring and building relationships with animals, plants, land, nature, and earth, through these modalities, Lessa has helped facilitate individual and collective healing. I didn't know if we were going to have Lessa with us today, but apparently she is with us now. So good morning, Lessa. How are you?
Good morning, Randy. I am fine. How are you?
I'm doing great. So I was just telling my listeners a little bit about you, but why don't you tell us what you do?
So I'm an animal communicator, and what I do is I help people know what's going on with their animals. I give animals a voice. I'm also currently working on a book called Animals as Earth Guardians, so this is my latest project. And So Animals as Earth Guardians, how animals can help us heal ourselves and the earth. And I'm interviewing animals, animal companions, animals in captivity, and animals in the wild. So that's another thing I'm doing. But mostly what I'm trying to do is support the health and well-being of animals, support the relationships with people, and then foster the human-animal bond.
Okay, so you said that you're interviewing animals or you're getting to know animals. How do you do that?
Well, I have a process where basically I calm myself, I reduce my thinking, I open my heart, I introduce myself to the animals, and then I invite a conversation or an exchange, and then see what happens. And what I do is I receive information from them. So I'll ask them questions like how are they experiencing them reality in terms of physical, emotional, mental, and spiritual. I'll ask them this is with animal companions, what their roles are. And I always start with asking any animal, do they have anything they want to share? And then when I'm working with animals in terms of interviews, which is a little different than a session for an animal where the intention is to support the relationship with their person or health issue, behavior issue, whatever may be going on. So that's one kind of thing. And then the other is I'm actually interviewing animals where I'm asking them questions about what their relationships are with humans and nature and the earth and what messages they have for humans.
So this is a psychic or intuitive kind of communication that you have with the animals.
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
Right?
I do a good portion of it at a distance, and then, you know, I try to interview the animals in person as much as I can. But, yes, it is. It's really about opening up our physical and our psychic senses to receive information from them and then to find a way to be able to translate it into language.
And how did you learn how to do that, or was it a natural thing that you discovered you had?
It's a little bit of both, because I always connected with aspects of nature. You know, when I was a child, I would talk to trees, you know, and I would feel like, it wasn't language, but I would feel like I have this energy exchange. So I was always like that. And then I did spend quite a number of years really refining and learning those skills, you know, doing different kinds of practices and exercises and things to learn how to refine that.
Is there anything that you find common in the language of pets or in the language of, say, like farm animals or anything like that? Is there a common denominator of the kind of thoughts that they're having?
Let me think about that, because I want to say so I'm going to answer the question a little differently, and then we'll probably get to what you're asking. But when you say that, the first thing that I think is in common when I relate to animals is that I hold them in very, very high regard and appreciation for just who they are. And I think that opens the door. And then they're able to share with me what it is they have to share. And I want to say that the one thing that almost all the animals that I would say that is in common is that they want that kind of respect and regard from humans, because they don't always get it. So it's that desire to be seen for who and what they are, just the way they are. And then as far as thinking, it's, you know, I don't even know if what animals do is thinking in some ways, but I will say that it's very, very different. You know, I just recently worked with a spider, and it was like, wow, I don't get this. You know, it's like, it's so remotely different. I mean, so far from like the way that I think, that the way they perceive reality is very, very different. Whereas a dog that I live with, I mean, there's so much more we have in common, that it's so much easier to be able to perceive their needs and wants and how they navigate their lives.
That's so interesting. I mean, you know, a lot of our pets do try to communicate with us, and they have their ways of looking at us. They have certain barks or meows or sounds or whatever, and we kind of learn what those things mean. Is it frustrating for animals that they cannot communicate verbally?
You know, I've never encountered that. I think it's frustrating when their needs aren't met and they are communicating in the way they know how, but I don't think, you know, just from, because I haven't asked them this question, so that's an interesting question, but my perception is that they don't really think of it that way. They're just in the moment. They're trying to communicate how to get their needs met, or if they're afraid, you know, that they're threatened, so something's not working, so they're communicating that. And I don't think they really think that, oh, I wish I could talk. It's more like, my need isn't getting met, and I'm trying to get it met. And there's frustration more about that rather than the language. It's just my sense of it.
Are they specific with their needs?
Yes, definitely.
Okay, so what would the need? What would the need of a dog? You know, thinking to maybe your dog or another dog, what kind of need would they would not be getting met?
Well, I'll give you a little story. And part of it too is if their needs aren't being met, they're going to get frustration. But if they know that their needs will be met, so let's say like you have certain types of dogs that will really need a lot of like off leash, like they'll need an off leash sort of time to get their yayas out because they're sort of built that way. They have a certain purpose that they have, and they just need to expend a lot of energy. That's for example, and so if they know that's going to happen, let's say even if it's once a week, they're not going to be as frustrated as a dog who doesn't know when they're going to get that next really long off leash walk. And I know that I had that agreement with my dog, who's no longer with me, and I'll just share a story with you. One time I came home and he had chewed into the couch, and I was quite upset, needless to say. And I looked at him, and he looked at me, and then I looked at him, and he looked at me, and then it was just that looking back and forth. And all of a sudden, I remembered he had been trying to tell me, hey, I haven't had my off-leash walk in a long time, and I've been letting you know, and he let me know as a gentleman, and then he let, you know, then he was a little more assertive and then a little more aggressive and then to the point of being destructive to get my attention because that need wasn't being met. And we had an agreement that he would get it in certain increments of time, and I wasn't keeping my end of the agreement. So,
yeah, okay.
Yeah, so things like that, it's like it's really interesting because if they know that they're going to get that need met, they can really wait for it. But if they don't know, they get, in a sense, anxious and can start acting out.
Have you ever worked with, like, horses and cows and animals like that?
I've worked with horses and I've worked with goats. Yeah.
Now, a couple years ago, I had an animal communicator on who worked pretty much with horses, and she mentioned that, you know, the animals, that they're very social and that they really do have thoughts and things like that. Well, what has been your experience working with horses?
Well, they definitely are social, and when I first started working with horses, I didn't really know much about horses, so I approached one horse. I said, okay, so tell me, what's the deal with horses, because I want to work with you all, and I don't know about you. And he straight out told me, he said, first off, we need each other. We are like group animals. We don't like to hang out just on our own, and that we need you as a person to take the lead. Because we need that, we work in groups and we need leadership. And he said, I'm not the lead horse, so I need somebody who's going to, in a sense, hold that leadership for me. And that we're very, I don't want to say emotional, like parrots are very emotional, but they have a certain level of emotion that is pretty strong with each other, and they're very sensitive to it. Yeah. If you'd like, I'd share with you some of the things that I got in an interview with. I've been interviewing some horses lately, and
yeah,
fascinating, fascinating
sure.
Stuff that's come up. Hold on, I need my little drink of water.
Okay.
So the first thing that they told me was that it took a long time for humans and horses to negotiate working with each other. A long, long time, because initially they were food for people. And then when humans and horses started working together, and that human started getting on top of the horse and riding a horse, there was the whole thing where humans got to go bigger distances, and how that sort of changed the way humanity perceived things. But the horses said that what happened was that when humans got on a horse, that they started to perceive, like visually, they started seeing differently, and they showed me sort of almost like a geodesic dome where you have these like little vortices of like, you know, little villages or something, or little forests, you know, like where they started to see the connections of how things clustered over land. And that changed, started changing the consciousness of humanity. And what the horses told me is that things started to change so quickly that humans didn't finish integrating that level of consciousness, and that there are still people on the earth, humans and horses, working together to sort of wrap up integrating that into the consciousness, this way of perceiving. And of course, you know, we've gone, we're up in space, you know, we're seeing the earth from above, but that there was that piece that never got fully integrated that they're working on. I just thought that was so interesting.
That's fascinating.
Isn't it?
That is absolutely fascinating. And I guess animals tell you if they're hurting, or have you ever been called to help diagnose a problem, a physical problem with an animal?
Well, I'm very careful about that because I'm not a veterinarian, and I'm not really a diagnostician. But what I can do is I will ask animals, you know, how are they doing physically? And then they'll show me. And so I'll give an example of a little dog who is end of life, you know, slightly had some dementia issues and had some hearing and vision loss, but was really being incontinent all over the house. And so we were working on end of life stuff, but what happened is that the dog showed me that he had some discomfort, like lower end. And, you know, I said, and what happens is when I get that information, I don't feel like the pain, but I sort of have a sense about, well, how would that feel in my body? You know, when I kind of check in with the animal, and I think, well, that for me, that might be like urinary or reproductive. So that's what I indicated. And they took the dog into the vet, and sure enough, he had a urinary tract infection. They were able to medicate that to deal with the rest of, you know, with the end of life, you know, the quality of life that we were trying to get for him. So
wow.
It's more like I could just tell you what the dog or the animal is experiencing, mm-hmm. and how that would, where in my body that would be for me, or how I would experience that. But I'm careful not to diagnose because I'm really not, you know, qualified to do that.
Right.
And
exactly.
Yeah.
But you
and
can
like
sort of
really
get a feel for. Yeah, you can get a feel for what's going on with them.
Exactly.
And maybe
and
help.
And refer to vets. Yeah, because I think that,
right.
that you know. That there's a nice collaboration that can happen with veterinarians.
Now, you have training in healing touch for animals. What is that?
That's an energy modality that's based in the chakra systems, and it actually started, it was developed by Carol Commodore, who was a massage therapist and a vet tech. And she was trained as a healing touch practitioner, which is a modality that a nurse developed for humans. That she then, I'm going to say my way of my perception, I think she just downloaded it from the universe of like just how to apply the techniques for animals. And she had to change them because animals' energy fields are different than humans. And there's a whole array of different treatments for different purposes. And mostly what it does, it helps clear and balance the system, and then that helps to calm the system, you know, allow all the organs, all the internal systems to the relaxation helps to reduce anxiety, and you know the immune system starts to function better and so forth. So it really helps on a physical and energetic level. It's a wonderful technique.
Yeah, it sounds like it's really
yeah.
wonderful. Having communicated with so many animals, do you have kind of a sense of how they feel about things like euthanasia and, you know, because we're so much kinder to our animals in that regard than we are to humans. And so I'm just wondering if there's any kind of enlightenment you've gotten on in that area.
Well, it's very interesting because almost every animal who I've worked with who's in that end-of-life process, everyone I've worked with has said we prefer to die naturally because mm-hmm. we know how to do that. And I'll state also the other part of it, but I will also say that, do you remember Laurie Anderson? She was a musician avant-garde type musician. Anyway, she Anyway, but she recently came out with a movie that's called Life of a Dog. So she's like a performance artist. And she said that she has a Buddhist teacher, and when her dog was dying and was, you know, at the vets and they were, you know, looking at end of life, her spiritual teacher said that, you know, death is a sort of advanced retreat process for humans and for animals, and there is so much to be learned in that process, and that, you know, he suggested not to deny that process to the animal. So this is one way of looking at it. And what the animals have told me again and again is that to them, they said, look, you know, when we get to a certain point towards the end of our life, it doesn't really matter to us whether we die now or a month from now, because to them, I would say cats, it's like they already, and it's interesting, my cat just showed up, but they already, I think, live so interdimensionally that for them to move to this other dimension outside of their body is not as big a jump as it is for us humans, you know. And so
right.
for animals, that they know what's going on. And what happens sometimes is that they've gotten off kilter, or sometimes they're on a lot of meds, and they don't, like normally in nature, they know exactly where the portal, you know, to pass through is. They all know that. That's natural for them. But sometimes when I have worked with end of life, sometimes the animals are like, they're not sure where it is. So we just ask for their spirit guides to come and let them make sure that they know where that portal is. And that really gives them a lot of assurance. And then whether they're euthanized or they die on their own, you know, they say there is no wrong in that, because as long as their people are coming from their heart, that's all that matters. Because they understand that it's such a bigger deal sometimes for us as people than it is for them.
Yeah,
and they don't
definitely.
And they don't want us to suffer around it. And they know they're dying, so they're thinking, you know, and I've done healing touch protocols, you know, in euthanasia context, and there's some very beautiful moments that happen. And it's really, it's both end, you know, both ways are okay.
Wow, that is so interesting. So interesting. Yeah, I mean, animals are highly intuitive. You know, they can see spirits and things like that. You can see them react to things that are not there. And if we pay attention to them, you know, we can really understand that what is actually around us. What do you think about the Rainbow Bridge?
And can you say more what you mean about that specifically?
Well, you know, there's this story about the Rainbow Bridge, how animals cross over this bridge when they pass, and that they're all in this beautiful place where they're playing, and they're waiting to be reunited with their loved ones again. And it is so comforting to people. You know, I share, I don't know if you know the Rainbow Bridge poem, but I share
I
that
do.
With people a lot who are suffering the loss of their animals, and it's so comforting. Are you familiar with the poem about the Rainbow Bridge?
I am familiar, and thank you for, I just wanted to understand a little bit more about the question.
Okay.
So I think it's a metaphor. Because I, you know, my experience, and I'd actually love to share with you my story of how I got into this work, because I think it's in and of itself is an amazing story. But
yeah.
I think that the animals are there on the other side. And I don't know that, you know, that it looks like this Garden of Eden in a sense. And maybe it is. But I think that like us, that animals have their own spiritual path. So they cross over, and sometimes they move on and do other jobs. But that doesn't mean that they still can't connect with us. And so,
Lessa. You're fading. Can you speak up a little?
Okay, yes. I'm going to just adjust my mic here.
Okay.
So I'll share with you a little story about how I got into doing animal communication, because I think it speaks a little bit to this.
Definitely.
I'll give you the little fulcrum of it. I'll just start by saying I grew up in a home where I didn't have pets. And when I discovered Dr. Doolittle, I thought, oh, my gosh, this is what I want to do. This is it. I was quite little then. And I had this notion that, oh, my gosh, I would like to have a little pet, a pet elephant. And I begged my parents for a really long time. And, of course, you know, that wasn't going to work. And I didn't get it. And I got quite upset. So I just gave up on that whole idea of having an elephant and of working with animals. And so I've really... You know, I had wanted to do that, and that I still actually get a little emotional sometimes when I think about that I get to do this now. And when I went to college, I left home and I got a dog, and I was pretty young then, pretty immature, and I went away for 3 months, and the dog stayed with friends, but he ran away. And when I came back, I realized, you know, I've been pretty negligent with this dog, and I'm not going to get another animal until, you know, I'm really ready for it. And then years later, I met my soulmate cat. And I bet a lot of the listeners have had that experience where it's love at first sight. And it doesn't happen with every cat, but it was amazing. And so I got permission from the people. She lived with 10 other cats outdoors, and I showed her what her life would be like. I asked her if she wanted to come. She said, yeah. You know, she felt the same connection with me. She did not utter a peep for the 8-hour drive back home.
Wow, and that's unusual for a cat.
I know. And she was a year old, and we spent 20 years together. And that level, that communication was natural for me. And then when I came home with my little puppy, Hinsa, who was my soulmate dog, it was the same thing, and he's the one that chewed up the couch. But we had all these agreements we made. We negotiated those as we went along, and you know, we had these wonderful years together. And Randy, it wasn't until 2 years after he died, I was sitting one morning meditating, and he came to me, which wasn't altogether unusual, and I didn't think anything of that. He came to me, and he said, you need to do animal communication. Literally, that's what he said to me. And I said, animal communication? I don't do that. And he said, that's what you need to do. So I checked it out, and I thought, oh, my gosh, I have been doing this. And then I realized I'd been studying, you know, this earth medicine stuff for 14 years and, had encountered with animals in the wild, had gone to zoos and visited animals, had done vision quests and journeying with animals. And I thought, well, yeah, I've been working with animals for a while. And then I went and invested more and got trained in healing touch for animals. And that's how I got to doing this. But he was my, I don't know the right word, but like my mentor.
Wow.
To do this work, and he still shows up, and so that love, that the love is the connection that's just unending, and they are there for us to guide us, and continue to guide us, and I'm sure he's doing other work with in other places, but he's still there for me.
That's so comforting, Lessa. I mean, I've had all kinds of animals throughout the years. Right now, I don't have any, you know. But I've had creatures other than furry things, but I love them dearly. And when they passed, you know, I grieved terribly over their losses.
Yeah.
And I really have always hoped that I would see them again, because it doesn't really matter what the animal is. You can create a bond with any living thing, can't you? I mean, you said a spider. That's amazing to me.
Definitely. Definitely. And I think
now, why would
just...
you communicate with a spider?
Because I'm interviewing animals for this book, so I want to interview as many different kinds of animals as possible. And I think I'm going to have to do a little bit more with spiders, because that was very interesting. And what I understand from other, researching other animal communicators, that like tarantulas are a little bit more receptive to humans. They're just a little bit, especially ones that are around humans. You know, so that's the other thing, is the difference between working with our animal companions, working with animals in captivity. They're used to people. And then working with animals in the wild. You know, wild animals, and so this is the other thing that I believe, that all animals, including the human animal, we have agreements with nature and the earth, you know, in that sense of it being a sort of a like a microcosm of the universe. And animal companions also have agreements with humans, not just nature and the earth. And wild animals do not have agreements with humans, except the ones in captivity. It's like, I think of it like a subcontract. You know, they depend on humans for survival in that situation, so they in a sense have to have an agreement with us. So so working with wild animals, you know, I'll always approach an animal, introduce myself, you know, and ask them if they're willing to do an exchange of some kind, you know, connect in some way. Animal companions, I have never had them say no. They always say yes.
How do animals in captivity feel?
Well, you know, it depends on a lot of different things. And because, you know, like zoos, some zoos have, you know, are better than others. But for animals who were born in the wild, who are in a relatively small enclosure, who have no, who don't have a choice to not be on display, some of them are depressed.
Yeah.
And then there are animals like, there are some places that I go to, there's a place locally called Wild Felid Advocacy Center of Washington State, where they take in, you know, the large cats that, you know, people had as pets, you know, bobcats or servals that they couldn't handle. And then they have tigers and leopards and mountain lions that either they have two that were born in the wild, but this mountain lion was born in the wild and lost her family and was too young to make it on her own, so they took her in. But they have, you know, like photo op cats that get too big, and so they've taken them in, and they do such good care for their animals. And their animals, they only have people coming at certain times. Animals all have a place, like enclosures they can go into and have privacy and space. And they're actually, you know, they don't know, most of them don't know anything different, and they're loved. And they have ways that they get their incredible powerfulness met. Like this one leopard, you know, cats, these big cats, they have this amazing power. You know, their presence is just amazing. And so I'll give you an example of Turbo. He's such a funny guy. He has a sense of humor. He's this huge, beautiful leopard. And he, when I interviewed him, the first thing he said, "I am king." And then he showed me, yeah, and he showed me his incredible presence and power. And he also showed how he's aware that on a physical level, he's not met at that level because his enclosure is about the size of a backyard. This is a big, big cat. You know, he can't push against, he can't get the push that he would normally have in nature. But he gets to climb really up high and view the whole sanctuary. And when he's up high, that's where he feels like he's king, and he's met at that level because he has his domain, and he's able to be powerful at the level that he was given that kind of power. And he's really loved. He's really loved, and he's very playful with people. And so he has a way that he is able to.
Can you speak up a little bit? You're fading again.
He has a way that he's able to be there and have joy and contentment. Because he's loved and he has relationships.
Right.
And so
I would love to experience what you experience, because I know every animal has a soul, and I look into their eyes, and I can relate to pretty much every animal, and they like me because of that. You know, I tend to attract them. I don't speak their language, but I have a great sensitivity to and respect for them. And it really upsets me when others don't. Just real quickly, because then I want to ask you, you know, where you are and how people can get in touch with you. But how do you keep yourself from not being so down when you come across an animal that's sad?
You know, and I'll just share with you, I've worked intuitively with people for many, many years. And I think that's helped to develop a certain what I call neutrality. It's like a sense of knowing the reality of life. There are so many things that I feel really sad about. You know, that I don't see how you could not be sad about. But actually, the animals are teaching me that too. Like, like recently I worked with some wolves. And so what I'll share with you, I'm not out in nature working with wolves. I have to do some work at a distance, and whenever I can, I try to do the interviews in person. But the wolves showed me that they're so tuned in to universal energy and to the flow, like, of, you know, like in, on the earth, of natural laws of nature. And the how everything has a beginning, middle, end. Everything is born, lives, and dies. And there's some kind of, like, bigger picture of that. And they're so very tuned in. And so I'm really careful about this, because just because they have that awareness and are able to know that, you know, they say that, sure, they suffer. They feel pain, and they're trapped in a trap, or one of their family is killed, or, you know, they, of course they feel that. But they don't go into that sort of emotional, big emotional place that we do. They're able to stay, I don't know, non-attached, separate, neutral. Like, they're able to be, here's a way of putting it, they have that inner observer that they're able to move into. And so that's what helps me, is I have a practice of having that inner observer that is non-judgmental and not attached. And I think most healers also need to cultivate that, because if you're in there emotionally with people you're working on, it doesn't help the situation. You know, like,
right.
if a surgeon gets, you know, emotionally involved with what they're doing, that they're not going to be able to do their job. So it's that kind of compassion and non-attachment that I need to constantly go to. But sometimes, you know, just recently I had a little, like, after working with, you know, doing many, many interviews, and there are two things that all the animals say, you know, when I say, what's your message for people? They say, be present. Slow down. Stop. Be present. Every animal in one way or another pretty much gives humans that message. And just use your senses to be aware of what's going on.
Before we
and
run
the
out
other
of
message,
time,
oh,
I'm sorry.
Okay.
I'm sorry to interrupt you, but we're coming down to the end, and I want to give you an opportunity to really to tell everybody, you know, where you are, how they can reach you, and how you can help them, perhaps.
Okay. So I'm in Washington State. I do a lot of work over the phone, so I'm available to really anywhere in the world. I do individual sessions. I design packages for situations with animals. I don't have it on board right now, but I am working on getting some training that could be done through Skype or over the phone. But I do animal communication training. I will be traveling to England in mid-May, and I'll be speaking at a conference there, and I'll also be offering a workshop. So I've got that available. And then if you're in Lansing, Michigan, I'll be offering a workshop and doing some consultations there mid-August this year. And the best way to contact me is through my email, or just go through my website, and that's www.wholeself-wholeearth.com, and that's whole, WHOLESELF. Dash whole, WHOLEEARTH, so whole self dash whole earth.
Okay, and I do have that link up on Les Alexander's show page, so if you go there, you can just click on it, and it'll take you directly there. So you can be contacted that way through your website?
Yes, and okay. My email's on there, and my phone, so both
perfect.
Are okay.
Perfect, it's
great.
All there. Great. This has been such a fascinating time that we've spent together. I just love, you know, I'm an empath. I love animals, and my heart bleeds for them. I mean, I can't watch any of the commercials where animals are abused. I can't take it. I just cannot emotionally take it. And I know they're made to tear, you know, pull at the heartstrings. I know that's the reason they do them, and they're looking for donations, which are very important, and I agree, but I just think this work that you do is so fascinating, and I'm sure that a lot of my listeners will think so too, and hopefully if they're having issues with their animals, they will contact you. So is there anything you wanted to say last minute? You have about a minute. to say something
if you want to.
I'll
just say really quickly that the animals just ask, please, please, leave us some habitat. Leave us some habitat. And then, again, the animals just, they just want us to see them for who they are. That, like you, Randy, I believe they each are a soul and that they just need to be seen as a soul that's evolving and that has a right to be here. Yeah.
Thank you. Thank you. Great way to end it.
All righty.
Well, Les, it's been great talking to you. Keep up the beautiful work that you're doing. I'm sure that the animals in this world all know about you, and they're all hoping to speak with you. And your book, let's see, what do I have?
Should be coming out next year. I'll keep you
posted.
Okay,
and it's called Animals as Earth Guardians, How Animals Can Help Us Save Ourselves and the Earth. And we're talking with Les Alexander, L-E-S-I-A, Alexander. So thank you so much for being my guest today. It's been a pleasure.
You're welcome.
Bye-bye.
It's been a pleasure. Bye-bye.
Thank you. You're welcome.
All right.
Unfortunately, our time is up for today, but if you have any comments or questions about today's show or any other shows, please email me at loveyourlife@randygfine.com, RANDIGFINE.com, and stop by my website, randygfine.com. Check it out. Sign the guest book. Come say hi. There's hundreds of articles for you to read, links to every show that I do. Links to all kinds of very, very interesting things. Come and stay for a while. Check it out, float around, and see what you like there. There's something for everybody. Tomorrow I will have on psychic medium, Laura Lee, who talks to angels and spirits, and she comes on every month. And Laura is always fascinating. If you'd like to call in and speak with her, the number to call is 424-220-1801, and it will be at 11 a.m. Eastern Time. Thank you for tuning in and listening to A Fine Time for Healing. I am your talk radio show host, author and life issues counselor Randy Fine, signing off until next time. May joy and serenity always be yours. Goodbye.
Thanks for listening. You can find out more about Randy at her website, randygfine.com. Join her next time for more of A Fine Time for Healing.
Hard not to hesitate, but we can't wait to be